My talk is entitled Chikungunya in the Americas, Correlation Between Local Media Reports and Cases Reported at PAHO. And that's kind of a mouthful. The objectives for the talk, I'm going to review a little bit about chikungunya as an emerging disease. I'm going to list some examples of underreporting and then bring up some of the consequences of the outbreak, as well as providing suggestions for future directions. So if you happen to speak the Makande dialect of Tanzania, you would know that chikungunya means that which bends up or contorted with pain. It's a very evocative name because patients generally have very severe arthralgias and myalgias and they will walk bent over. It's endemic to basically East Africa, and there was a large outbreak in the 2004-2008 period in the Indian Ocean Islands and Asia, which really defined a lot of what we know about the virus, about vectors, about control, about symptoms, about long-term sequelae, attack rates, mortality rates. And using some of that information to predict what's happening in the Caribbean, you see some discrepancies. During the Asian and Indian Ocean outbreak, when they had other populations that were immunologically totally naive, the attack rate was up to 20 to 35%. So background, chikungunya is an arbovirus from the Toga viridae family. The vectors are Aedes and Culex mosquito vectors, and that has some implications for prevention because they are day-biting, they're urban vectors, they're able to survive in household containers of water and breed very well in this very populous urban environment. The clinical syndrome of chikungunya includes high fevers, a nondescript rash, and severe joint pain. There's no specific treatment for the virus, and it's largely a clinical diagnosis, which again has implications for underreporting. It is able to be confirmed by serology, but it is very costly and available only at a few reference labs in the Caribbean, which also explains some of the reason for the underreporting. So according to the Pan American Health Organization, the first case of local transmission in the Americas occurred December 2013 on St. Martin. Since that time, up to October 15th of this year, there's been about 1.7 million cases. Every nation in the hemisphere has had at least imported cases, but there are six countries that claim there's been no local transmission. Those six countries are Canada, Bermuda, Cuba, Uruguay, Chile, and Argentina. Expected for the countries outside of the temperate range, or outside of the tropical range, somewhat surprising for Bermuda and Cuba, but those are the statistics reported to the Pan American Health Organization. Some countries have attack rates up to 20%, including Martinique, Guadeloupe, and St. Barts. Most countries are reporting attack rates in the hundreds to thousand per 100,000, so under 1%, which is surprising for this virus. So one of the problems with the official Pan American Health Organization statistics is that they rely on the country to report the statistics. Many countries are lagging in reporting, and many jurisdictions have not reported at all this year, including 11 countries where you would expect the incidence to be peaking at this time. So that 1.7 million is a gross underestimate. So causes of underreporting, a lot of the countries where this outbreak is occurring are endemic for dengue, malaria, and other arboviruses. So clinicians faced with a novel disease might not recognize it. The World Health Organization characterizes the public health infrastructure in many of these countries as poor, and most of them do not have active surveillance programs. Most countries initially were only reporting serologically confirmed cases, which is the tip of the iceberg. Other problems with health infrastructure that were revealed by the epidemic included overcrowding in healthcare facilities, people delaying care, and as the outbreak became more prevalent, there were actually media campaigns discouraging people from going to the doctor unless they were at extremes of age or had severe cases. So these are in no way to blame the countries that I'm going to give the examples, because they are truly only examples, but several countries had fairly egregious examples of underreporting. So according to the Pan American Health Organization, Haiti has 627 cases per 100,000 people. It has not been updated since summer 2014. Prior to that reported incidence, a household survey done by the Igorot Foundation in May 2014 suggested the attack rate in the country was actually 9%, or 90,000 per 100,000, not 600 per 100,000. Public health leaders in the country are on record as saying they expect to have a 50% attack rate by the end of the epidemic. But they are lacking the ability to perform active surveillance and are not reporting to the Pan American Health Organization. Some other instances occurred in Jamaica, where last fall the official incidence was 8.8 per 100,000, at a time when schools and businesses were reporting 30% absenteeism. The health minister that fall was again on record as saying they expect a 60% attack rate in the country. The current PAHO incidence is 64 or 65 per 100,000, which does not fit with the lived experience in country. In Curaçao, the official reporting is about 2,600 cases. They last updated last October. Local media reports last fall were saying there was at least 8,000 cases, and cases were being diagnosed at a rate of 1,000 new cases per week. Epidemiologists in country were quoted as expecting an estimated 20,000 to 75,000 cases in this island with a population of 140,000 people. I love this picture. I hate this picture. Again, very evocative with the fogging campaigns. So Honduras declared a state of emergency last fall when there was a neighborhood not too far from the capital that had a significant infection. According to the Ministry of Health, the epidemic is over in Honduras, but hospitalizations for arbovirus-like syndromes are up 50% compared to last year's baseline. And according to the information they're giving the Pan American Health Organization, there's not been any deaths, but multiple deaths due to the virus have been reported in the local press. So the public health response in the Caribbean and largely Central America has included fogging campaigns, media messages on mosquito control, both of which have been effective to some degree. I think really the best thing that's come out of this epidemic is enhanced collaboration between the Caribbean Public Health Association, the Pan American Health Organization, the CDC Division of Vector-Borne Diseases, and the French Institut Pasteur, which is locally headquartered in French Guyana. So the health consequences, on a more global scale, many countries in the Caribbean reported shortages of basic medicines, including acetaminophen and anti-inflammatories. There's been overcrowding of health facilities and no ability to plan for a surge when you have hospitals that have a 40% absenteeism rate because they are also coming down with the disease. Economic consequences, certainly the poor are disproportionately affected because of local conditions, lack of window screens, so they have a higher attack rate for the illness, but they're also more affected by lost wages and copays to access health services. There have been instances of price gouging for mosquito repellents and antipyretics in Haiti. Direct costs to the public sector go into the millions. So Jamaica earmarked $500 million Jamaican dollars to eradication efforts, which is a little bit less impressive when you realize that that's about 4.2 US dollars, but that's still about 3% of their public health budget. And a very small island, Curaçao, is spending $2 million on mosquito vector control. There's also concerns for productivity losses. In Jamaica, one of the private sector organizations estimated $6 billion Jamaican dollars were lost due to productivity and work absenteeism, in addition to the effects on schooling for the children that were out of school. And one of the other big concerns is concerns for tourism effects, because in other areas, when they had the outbreak in the Indian Ocean Islands, tourism dropped in Reunion and Mauritius by about 30%. And the Caribbean is the world's most dependent region on tourism to support their GDP, and they cannot afford to have a 30% loss in their tourism revenue. From a public health standpoint, this epidemic revealed gaps in the public health infrastructure that are widespread and potentially very dangerous if we were to be confronted with an epidemic with a higher fatality rate. Poor handling of the epidemic has bred discontent and distrust of public health officials. And there's also concern that some of the measures that they are implementing are ineffective. The pressure to do something has given way to fogging campaigns that are not particularly effective against this vector. Daytime fogging for an indoor mosquito, not likely to be particularly effective. The Honduran Nurses Association has publicly accused the Secretariat of Health in the country of supplying substandard medications and falsifying death totals. So we are losing the trust of our public. There's also been political ramifications, with multiple jurisdictions calling for their ministers of health to resign over poor handling of the epidemic. Curaçao is actually taking it to a court audit with potential criminal charges for employees of the Ministry of Health, and some editorials are suggesting that the health response to the epidemic was one of the factors behind a change in government in Trinidad and Tobago and Antigua Barbuda. So future directions, we really need to improve surveillance in the region. I would like to see sero surveys done to track the true incidence. We expect a 20 to 30% attack rate for this virus when it hits an immunologically naive population. In the Caribbean alone, that would be 11 million cases. We're showing less than a fifth of that for the whole hemisphere. I'm also trying to implement some studies of excess mortality. The official mortality rate for chikungunya is about 1 per 1,000. But when you look at excess mortality in other areas that have had outbreaks, it's closer to 3 to 5%, which puts it on par with the mortality rate for the plague. These countries have endemic malaria, they have endemic dengue. The fact that they need better vector control should be a surprise to nobody, but they have dropped off with declining death rates from malaria, so we need to be much more aggressive on that. It's also important to know that a big factor in the spread of the disease in the Caribbean was importation of Aedes albopictus, which is a very competent vector for this disease, and it's not native to the area. And we also need some studies of the economic impact. So in short, we have vulnerable economies with a poor public health infrastructure, a massive outbreak with high acute and chronic morbidity, possibly more mortality than we're detecting, and a disconnect between official statistics and the local experience that's fostering distrust in the public health system. Any questions? Yes.
Hi, Allison Bettenheim from the University of Pennsylvania. So I've been struck at the conference by a lot of the discussions on Twitter and health, and I'm be something where passive surveillance could be, you know, informed at least by, like, you know, there's a, like, hashtag chickpea or people talking about it.
There's definitely been social impact or social media tracking of the disease, more of an informal basis than a formal basis. One study looked at the experience on Curaçao, and they were able to actually show that, actually, I apologize, it was Dominica, but they were able to localize the neighborhoods and do some targeted spraying, which appeared to have decreased the incidence, which again is surprising because that's not how you expect that vector to behave. But it's not being implemented at a widespread area or officially for government purposes, which is unfortunate.
I have a question. Yes. How do you tease out the dengue cases from the chikungunya cases without laboratory results? Because the symptoms overlap a great deal.
The dengue tends to be more proximal joints and bone pain as opposed to the distal arthritis involved with chikungunya. That's certainly not 100%. The only truly pathognomonic sign for chikungunya is inflammation of the ear cartilage, which is only seen in chikungunya. But people come in with like a cauliflower ear, and that's very specific, but it happens in only a few percent of cases. Yes, so this study I looked at basically local media reporting. I'm trying to track social media, but it's a lot more convoluted.
You mentioned that the vector was
imported. It's the Asian tiger mosquito, which Aedes albopictus, which came to the Americas in the 1980s in a shipment, we believe, in a shipment of re-imported, retreaded tires that landed in Houston, and in the past 30 years has spread throughout the tropical and temperate regions of the hemisphere, including Chicago. So as far north as we are, we, in theory, have a competent vector to transmit chikungunya.